Hi everyone, I'm Mikey. I'm from the University of Hawaii, and right up front I'm going to tell you my co-authors on this are Malti and Michelle. Malti is a climatologist, and Michelle is a food security person. And so I'm going to talk a little bit, and my background is actually as a plant breeder, and we started having some conversations on how climate might affect breeding targets, how it might affect food security. And this is really because, right, when we start talking about agriculture, we're often talking about the intersection between genetics, agronomy, and climate. Obviously, here we're going to be talking about the climate impact, and when we started having these conversations, Malti, Michelle, and I, it's like, okay, how do we start parsing out this variation, and how can we use our different expertises to try and find these relevant areas? And this is obviously because when we start looking at climate change, everyone's going to be affected. So what you're seeing here is under each of the three of the RCP scenarios, the number of people in the world who are going to be affected by any of the projected 10 climate changes that you see. So what you're actually, so on the top is, you know, the world population, the percentage of the population that you're seeing affected. And below, you're seeing a differential effect of developing, of low, median, and high-income countries. So what you're really seeing is everyone's going to be affected. It's just the way that you're going to be affected, and that's obviously not surprising, but it is obviously a huge rationale for going into this. And we decided because of this to look at the Philippines as a case study. Philippines is an island nation. There's over 7,000 different islands. It's broken up into 18 political regions and 81 provinces. So what we really wanted to do is we wanted to understand how yield is differentially impacted by climate in rain-fed and irrigated rice systems, and we really wanted to understand how sensitive it was to different types of climate, particularly ENSO. We really wanted to see how ENSO was going to impact the El Nino Southern Oscillation, was going to impact rice production and more generally how projected climate change in terms of temperature was going to affect things, and perhaps maybe a brief look at some tropical storms. So we decided to do this as a case study. And why did we do it? Well, because we had data available. So one of the things that we really had is there's great yield data in the Philippines from fill rice and other sources. We were able to get irrigated irrigated rice production, upland rice production at the national and the provincial level, and actually planting dates and harvest dates for all four quarters of the year. So we were able to partition this at both the temporal scale of quarterly and annually, and we were also able to partition it at a spatial scale from national and down at the regional level. We didn't end up going down to the provincial level because there ended up being some gaps in the data there, and we didn't really want to interpolate some of that data. And so we have this 29-year time series. We actually, and this will become apparent why we need this, where sativa was grown and collected for the entire worldwide germplasm system that's available at Genesis, and environmental and soil data for each of those locations. We have ENSO data, precipitation data, soil moisture data, and air surface air temperature data. And so what we wanted to do is try and combine all of these different data sources. So for the grad students in here, be aware of all the different databases that are out there with fun data that you can use when you have a question, right? So this is what ideas you can have, you know, when you have lunch with your friends. So we have all of these different data sources to get at those questions that we had. So we just did a simple analysis here. We converted our raw yields to a yield per hectare at nationally and regionally, and for irrigated and rain-fed. We calculated ENSO, precipitation, temperature, soil moisture, again, across these regions. We removed the annual yield trend to just look for anomalies over time. We used a 7-year moving average for that, running average for that. And then we wanted to explore this relationship between the detrended yield and climate under the regional, annual, level and at the quarterly and sorry, at the regional and national level and at the quarterly and annual level. And you're seeing R in MATLAB there because those are the software that we use. I use R, and Multi loves MATLAB. I don't want to pay for the license for MATLAB, so I use R. But that was a thing. So what do we initially see in yields over time? Right, and I should also say the reason we target rice is because in the Philippines, people on average eat 120 kilograms of rice per person per year. Right, so that's a lot of rice. But what we see is just an increase in yield over time, like you'd expect, right? You're seeing an increase in yield over time, and once we detrend that data, we're actually seeing fairly stable except for a few time points, and you'll see what those can actually be attributed to. But fairly stable increase. When we break it down by the quarterly data, there's actually quite a bit more noise in the data. And that's to be expected because it's not going to be the same over time. There are different conditions. But generally, we've seen rice production keeping pace with population growth, much like we'd expect, and it looks pretty good, right? But we want to get at what some of those big anomalies are that are changing quite a bit. And so I know this is kind of hard to look at. So this is just this is yield over time, so kind of a classic Havmola plot, if you guys are familiar with those. And what you actually see is, right, the reason there's not a lot of variability over the annual cycle is because the yield anomalies aren't hitting regions uniformly, apart from a few. So one, the big dip that you saw in 1998, and then the other is that big dip around 2010, natural disasters. So in 1998, there was a massive typhoon, and in 2010, there was actually a fairly large earthquake that disrupted production. So that's where we're seeing these larger national scale issues rather than kind of regional issues that are popping up. So what we're seeing is that this national yield can actually mask a lot of these regional developments, which is not unexpected. You'd expect at your finer scale data that pattern would hold true. But it's nice to be able to pull out these rather larger scale anomalies. So what does it look like when we start looking at maps? I love maps. So this is just looking at a particular quarter. And one thing that we found is that your yield relationships, and the reason it cuts off at 0.3, in our analysis, a statistically significant correlation was 0.31. So we didn't show anything that was less than a statistically significant correlation here. But what we actually saw is that there was no relationship with actual precipitation. Between our yields, even in the rainfed, there was no relationship. But there was a strong relationship with soil moisture, and so what was driving it was what was the soil moisture in the quarter previous to planting, and that was really what was driving our yield. Which was it was interesting that the relationship showed up fairly strongly when it came to soil moisture, but not to what actual precipitation was, and this actually can be related, particularly when you look back at ENSO. You see, when we're looking at ENSO, so now this is instead of rain-fed and irrigated, this is quarter one and quarter two of the year, and we're seeing a really strong negative correlation with ENSO. And what that means is that when we have an El Niño cycle, it gets really dry. So we're seeing this cause a drying effect, which then is impacting yields, right? Again, particularly, as you'd expect, in the rain-fed and not the irrigated, because irrigated is meant to mitigate this. And when we're looking at the irrigated, right, we're really looking at the storms that are causing a big thing. But where we're seeing this modulation with soil moisture is what acres get planted. Because this yield increase over time has been an increase in yield per se, but it's also been an increase in the amount of land under production. Right? So we're seeing a combination of those two things that are driving that yield increase. And not surprisingly, what we're seeing is essentially no relationship with temperature. Not surprising. The Philippines are tropical. There's not a lot of temperature variation right now, or at least over this, outside of the range that you'd expect for rice. So this was interesting to us. It wasn't unexpected. We know temperature variability is going to be much more important in the temperate regions than the tropical. But we decided to look at what's going to happen when we start looking out into the future, right? So what you're seeing here, this gets back to why we queried Genesis for all the sativa. So this is This are what temperature is on the x-axis, precipitation is on the y-axis, and what you're seeing with blue is that's the climate envelope for the Philippines under current temperature conditions. And in the red is where projected temperature for the Philippines is going to be in 2100 under a business as usual scenario. And the dashed lines are what single standard deviation. So what, and all these points are all the rice occurrence points in the tropics. So any place that there's been a collection of rice made that's stored in a gene bank or herbarium, that's where those are there. And so what we're seeing is we're seeing this movement over the next 100 years where we're moving, in some cases, one standard deviation away outside of the normal range that we see for rice. And so for me, I started thinking, oh, this is where I need to get parents from when you start making crosses. Let's start looking, where are these accessions? How can we get a handle? How bad or how good are they? And now, instead of looking at 100,000 rice accessions, I'm saying, okay, I can use these climate parameters based on what we know to say, okay, we need these parents, and now I also know, okay, I can limit that search space, right? Because otherwise that search parameter space is really huge. And we can also target it to those specific environments that we know are going to be, you know, in this case, it's going to be that soil moisture limitation. And so really, what we had some kind of conclusions, not groundbreaking, but fun for us to, you know, take this test case of combining all this data together. You know, regional data is much more important, right? I mean, that's not a big surprise to anyone. The national data is really useful to paint a picture, right? But we really need to get the multi-scale data in order to really understand and try and understand what's going on, because a lot of that regional variation is just washed out in the national data. In the case of El Nino, it's not impacting yield directly. It's impacting soil moisture, and there's this 1/4 lag time that is really driving it. That really impacts planting decisions more than yield per se, and so that's something to take in consideration. And the Philippines, like many places, is steadily moving outside the range of their germplasm. So how do we now combine how we know temperature and climate are going to change to pick parents and kind of rationally choose what our breeding targets will be in order to try and make progress in what is a relatively short time frame. So with that, any questions? Again, we are University of Washington, University of Hawaii. We had a lot of fun, and this was a project that we started talking about because, you know, we have these mutual interests, and, you know, it's nice to have coffee with people.
Mm-hmm. What's your opinion on the question of whether or not plant breeders, whether they know it or not, are already currently selecting rice varieties that are responsive to plant season?
I think you probably are. But the question that I would have is, within your breeding germplasm, how much variation do you have for that particular trait? So because the question that I have within that germplasm is, well, that's a pretty narrow germplasm, relatively speaking, because you want good tasting, good production rice, right? And so while you might have already selected for that, you might reach a limit and you might have missed something that's more responsive. And I think one of the things you can do here is that there are ways to go further than simply just looking at the accessions, right? So because rice, you're lucky in rice. They've genotyped, Erie's genotyped all 100,000 accessions that they have in their germplasm bank. So what you can do there is you can go further. If you have any gene or QTL associated with that, you can look at all the genes and look at your accessions. Are they different from what's already there? In that, when they're already in that range. And so now instead of 100,000, and you might get 1,000 that are within your particular window, maybe now you're testing 50, right? And it's a way to get these, because screening 100,000 things isn't feasible. Screening 1,000 things is a massive undertaking. Screening 50 things, oh, yeah, that's fun. I can do that, you know, I can do that in my spare time. You don't even need a major, you know, you can get a real good idea and then get it down to, you know, a manageable number.
Interested, endo, when it comes to endo, mm-hmm. solar radiation could be really potentially important for crop growth. Why did you do this, any analysis on solar radiation?
So, we're going to, is the short answer. We didn't initially think about it, and then we were sending the paper to some friends to look at, and they were saying you should do that, and so now we're going to do that. We didn't think about it, and you're right, we should have thought about that. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.